What's up, Brandon? Thank you for joining the podcast today. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Lorenzo. Thanks for having me, man. It's a pleasure to be here.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, where you're from?
Yeah, my name is Brandon Davis. I originally grew up in Southern California, a small town called Hemet. It's kind of by Temecula on the other side of the mountains, Palm Springs, if anyone knows that area. Currently live in Utah. That's where I work right now. And I've been here for about 3 years now. This is where my wife and I are kind of settling down for the time being. But other than that, yeah, I guess some fun facts about me. I'm a business guy. I love everything to do with business. And I'm also a diehard baseball fan. So that's the majority of the time I'm doing one of those two things, either working on my business or watching baseball.
Nice. I just came back from a vacation in San Diego, and it's actually where me and my wife plan to move, you know, sometime this year. You know, we love SoCal, and we're from the Bay Area, so we're Northern California. But that's awesome. You know, what's your favorite sports team?
So I'm a Dodger fan. Growing up in Hemet, if anyone knows the area, it's kind of in between both LA and San Diego. My old man grew up a Dodger fan, and so I had to carry on the legacy in the family. So San Diego, though, besides the Padres, not a huge Padre guy, but San Diego is a dream spot, dude. That is like an ideal retirement spot for me in the future. I love it. It's so beautiful down there.
Yeah, you probably, as a Dodgers fan, you're probably loving it right now with your new all-star.
All-stars, our entire lineup right now. It's feeling great for me, man.
I know. Literally, you have like a super studded, star-studded team.
Yeah, and it feels good. People will mock and complain, but you know what? I'm here for it, man. I love it. We just got to go win the World Series now, you know?
Yeah. I'm a baseball fan myself. I mean, I'm playing in an adult baseball league here in the Bay Area, so I definitely can relate with that in love of playing. What's your favorite position?
So growing up, obviously, I don't really play much anymore. This summer, actually, I have a goal of mine to join kind of the same thing you're in there. I'm going to do a softball league. Growing up, I was a pitcher, and then I played first base. So probably when I get back going into it this summer, I'll go and try and transition back to first base a little bit. What about you? What position?
Nice. Are you left-handed?
I'm right-handed, actually, but I live for first base.
Oh, okay.
I know most of them are lefties.
I was going to say, because I'm left-handed.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm left-handed, so those are the only positions I could play growing up. He's outfield, first base, and pitcher. So, but as growing up, I wish I would have stayed more in outfield instead of pitching, because as you get older, like, there's a lot better pitchers than I was. So I was like, I should have just focused on outfield or first base, you know, one of those, and then just went all out. So right now, I love playing left field and first base if I have to. But yeah, outfield is my favorite. I love tracking down
that's
the ball.
That's what's up. I love it.
So what was childhood like for you, man?
Well, childhood was pretty simple. I mean, I loved growing up where I grew up. Hemet, it's kind of a farming community. It's a lot of grapefruit groves and orange tree groves. And so the entire town was just built around kind of farming agriculture like that. And so I had a lot of good friends. I was very focused on school, church, sports, you know, like as far as kid concerns go, I had like the typical American kid life where my parents were working and I would go to school. I played in some recreational sports, hung out with friends. Like life was very good. And I credit all that to my amazing parents. I had the most amazing parents growing up. I should say I still have the most amazing parents who always were looking after me, making sure I had kind of my brothers and sisters looking after me as well, and just making sure I was always in a good space. And I think a lot of who I am today reflects back to what my parents instilled in me very little when I was very young and was able to kind of become who I am today simply because of their example and kind of what they put me through and some of their ideals they instilled in me.
What was what's one thing that kind of jumps out at you right now when you're thinking about it, you know, that your parents have instilled and that you still, you know, continue to this day follow?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest things for sure is just my faith. I grew up in a Christian household, and so transforming that into my adult life now, like recognizing, okay, every single day when I wake up and go to bed, I'm going to say prayers. I'm going to pray over my food. I'm going to trust in God in the entire process. And I feel like that's a trend that a lot of young adults these days are facing, where they may have grown up religious. They may have grown up, be that Christian, Muslim, whatever faith you were. But a lot of times people are just ditching their religions nowadays. And I am a personal believer, whatever religion or faith you practice, it's better for society. Everyone has to have some kind of faith inside of their lives. And so just them providing me that value when I was little, and not just saying like, hey, we're going to shove our faith down your throat and make you come to church every Sunday and do X, Y, and Z and make sure that you're a good old Christian boy. Like, they didn't do it like that. They encouraged me. They taught me how to pray. They taught me how to read scriptures. Like, they showed me the process. So that way, as I got older and older, I actually liked doing it rather than just felt forced.
Yeah, that's funny. As growing up, I was actually, I grew up Christian in the church as well, but I was, me and my brothers were drugged to the church. You know, they made us, you know, a lot of times we didn't, you know, as a kid, you want to play, we played sports, you'd be in love being active. So the last thing we wanted to do is have to go into the church. But I see what you mean. I definitely grew up in it. And it actually, I did the same thing where I like kind of went away for a minute. And I'm like, I kind of want to find out who I am away from this, away from what, because, you know, it's like your family, growing up in a family where something is always taught and you're not really supposed to venture out to other ideals or other things. So it's like you get older, you know, get curious and you go to college or something and you want to learn new things. Here you hear from different areas of the world, different people. As soon as I was learning more, I was like, I kind of feel more comfortable. So I started coming back, you know, to church to cut back to the, cause it is the spiritual aspect, right? It's like, it's weird. It's like intangible. Like you can't see it, but, you definitely feel it in the faith. And, so that's what actually made me come back, and me and my wife, you know, to this day. So we'd like to go. So that's awesome, man. That's cool.
No, and I love your story too, because I have a friend specifically right now, kind of exact same situation as you, where growing up, like he was drugged to church every week. He came from a big family. I think he has 8 siblings, and not including him. So he makes 9. And so his entire life, same exact situation. He was drugged to church. He didn't really ever want to go and stuff. And then he ended up kind of leaving, not wanting to go anymore, kind of lost his relationship with Christ. He still is kind of on a journey where he's trying to figure out who God is to him. But what strikes me uniquely about him is he recognized that just like the principles taught in church, you know, like helping your neighbor, having faith, like hoping in good things to come, like practicing service, like these overall great qualities that everybody in life should be practicing. He's like, I don't really know where I'm at with God. I don't know if I even believe in God, but I still go to church just because they teach good principles. And I know when I go, it makes me be a better person. So he shows up to church every couple of weeks. And it's kind of funny because I look at him, I'm like, dude, you don't even believe in God. But he goes, yeah, but I believe in the practices that are being taught here. So it's kind of interesting, yeah. But that reminds me a little bit about you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I hear that a lot. And, I think the principles are sound, right? And there's a reason why they lasted as long as they did, is because, yeah, you can fit them into any area of your life. If you follow these simple principles, you know, you're going to be a better human being. And I don't know if it's true to this day, but I don't know. It was always told that, you know, a lot of the business, some like business companies would have someone read like the book of Proverbs or something, just, you know, while, as a prerequisite, you know, to getting a job. I don't know how true that is, but to me that made sense. I'm like, okay, so it made me actually want to read it more of like, okay, so these are the principles that are pretty sound, and following that, it's just going to make you a better person. And that's what I've always liked about it.
Yeah. It obviously teaches the lessons that we all need, despite, once again, if you're a faithful person or not, it teaches you everything you need. But that's why I continue to go. Obviously, my relationship with Christ, but not to shove that down the entire audience's throats today.
Yeah, no worries. But I feel like the reason I like to bring it up is because, and similar to your friend, it is a lot of my listeners are around that age where it's like, you're still trying to figure yourself out, right? And now we have the internet. I didn't have that a lot growing up. You know, I was born in 94, but a lot of people, even my younger brothers who've grown up with the internet, it's like a lot of them, we're all just trying to figure things out, right? We're always trying to just figure out who we are, what's our purpose in this life. And a lot of times that's why I created this podcast, is because to talk to different people, hear their stories. And so that brings me back to your story, is, you know, what made you move, you know, from California to where you're at now? And then, we'll get started from there.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll throw in this plug too. If anybody does have questions, like I said, Lorenzo, I don't want to sit here and shove religion down anybody's throat, but if anyone has questions and they feel like they want somebody to reach out to, my messages on Instagram or my email are always open. If you guys have faith questions or anything like that, I'd be happy to answer them. You can find me at getoveryourself_podcast or shoot me an email at llcgetoveryourself@gmail.com. Once again, anybody has some type of random question with that, totally down to help you out. But yeah, going back to your question now, Lorenzo, I left Southern California as soon as I graduated high school. Like I mentioned, a lot of my journey is all focused around faith. And so I decided to do a missionary trip to Brazil back when I graduated high school. And so I moved to Brazil for a year and worked doing missionary work, teaching people about Christ, teaching them English. And it was just one of the most incredible experiences of my entire life. As I lived in Brazil, I got to meet like the most humble people on earth. You know, some of these people lived with like three different groups of family members. So you got your aunts and uncles and their kids, you got your family, and then your grandparents all living in one roof. But it's a very small house, small situation. Mm. And it just taught me so much about how here in the US we take things for granted a lot of times. We always want the bigger house. Yeah. We always want the fancier car. We always want X, Y, or Z. But like what true happiness comes down to is making sure we're surrounding ourselves with the ones who we love and the ones who love us. And so just like some of those ideals that I learned down in Brazil, just basic principles of culture and loving, just absolutely amazing. Then I took a lot of those principles to where I'm at now in Utah. I went out here for school actually. And then I ended up just staying for the past little bit. And that's where I'm working on my business now.
What was the biggest culture shock? I mean, other than, you know, you feel like, I feel like we take things for granted. Obviously, in the US, we live in a country of abundance and completely separate. I'm not sure what Brazil is like. I've never been, but, you know, what was that like for you?
You know, anybody who's traveled outside the US, if you're an American who's lived in the US your entire life, odds are if you've gone on a vacation to Mexico or to an Asian continent or Europe or anything like that, you always do the Americanized version of that country. You stay in the nice resorts, you eat the American food, you go on vacation, you still eat pizza and hamburgers, you know. That's the life when you're an American traveling to another country. What was so unique about my experience with Brazil was I was actually living with Brazilians. I was in their city. I was speaking their language. I was eating their food. I was walking their streets. Like nothing about it was the Americanized version. So as far as culture shock goes, it was simply like recognizing, holy cow, like as an American, the world isn't revolved around me. And there is so much more to life that is important, as I kind of already alluded to. But yeah, the ultimate biggest challenge at first was definitely learning the language. I moved down there speaking no Portuguese, but by the grace of God, I was able to pick it up decently quick so I could communicate. And then from there, just being able to try and help those people understand what their emotions were, understand how they felt. Because when I was trying to help them find Jesus Christ or learn English or serve them in any way I possibly could, their way of reacting to things is completely different than how normal Americans react. And so it was kind of interesting to be able to figure out, okay, how does your culture react to certain situations versus mine? How can I better envelop yours and not just think like I'm going to shove my Americanized version on you 24/7? Like, no, I want to learn how you live. I want to learn how you feel.
That's awesome. Yeah. And like you said, like if we, anytime we're going to on a vacation, we want that resort, that all-inclusive hotel or something where you're completely separate from what's actually going on, you know, in that country or what it feels like to be, you know, in a different country. So that's awesome, man. So what made you become an entrepreneur?
So ever since I was probably in like third grade or something, this is kind of a throwback. Like I mentioned, my dad was a great example inside of my life. He'd get home from work. He always made sure he had time for the family, even though he's a very busy guy. He was always home for dinner, always at the sporting events, like typical, like not, I guess not typical these days, but like the best dad. I can't even describe that enough. He is the best dad. But growing up, he would still have a lot of work done when he came home, but he wanted to spend time with me and my siblings, my mom. And so a lot of times he'd sit down on his laptop, he'd sit on the couch and I'd sit next to him. And while he'd be working away, we'd turn on ABC Shark Tank. And that just became like my favorite show ever. I just saw these like so-called everyday citizens, somebody you could pass at the grocery store, sit next to on the bus, you know, just like see at a park and you'd have no idea. So these average people who were just making these the most extraordinary products or business to change somebody's life. And ever since I was really little, like I said, second, third grade, when I started watching Shark Tank with him, I was like, okay, when I get older, I want to be like them. because they were like heroes to me. I saw these average people mm-hmm. who were just making the most incredible things. And so I kind of started in my business journey a little bit early, started my first actual licensed company, my first LLC, back when I was in high school. My buddy and I started a landscaping business. I had an old pickup truck and my buddy had some lawnscape equipment, you know, your typical mowers, edgers, things like that. And so then we just said, all right, let's do this. We throw it in the back of the truck and we drive around my hometown of Hemet and start knocking on door to door and say, hey, we'd love to cut your grass. We undercharged our services greatly. Unfortunately, we probably missed out a lot of extra cash we could have made, but it kind of instilled that entrepreneurial drive back when I was in high school, and it's kind of just taken off ever since then.
Well, what advice could you share to someone that might want to start their own business?
I mean, this is so cliche, and so I apologize for being that guy, but just like figure something that you would be okay with doing, some kind of skill you have, some kind of basic knowledge, and just get started. Odds are you're going to fail. I mean, that landscaping business, it didn't necessarily fail, but it also wasn't like making a gazillion dollars. Then obviously after we graduated, we kind of disbanded, but it was the principle of getting started that made me realize like, okay, this is something I can actually do. I just have to actually start it. And I think that's where a lot of people get kind of caught up, is they just don't start. There's so many things that'll get in their way. It's the fear of losing income. You don't want to quit the other job because you're making a steady paycheck. You're afraid of what your friends and family are going to think. You're afraid you're going to fail. You don't have that confidence in yourself. So at the end of the day, the best way to get started in starting a business is just get started.
And how do you build that confidence? Does it come with, go over time, or like, how does someone stay consistent? I think that's probably one of the things that I've struggled with, you know, either whether it's in this podcast or wanting to do something new. It's like consistency, it's tough. Mm-hmm.
And that's tough too, because that has nothing to do, well, it can have something to do with business, but consistency and like self-discipline, that's an entire journey mm-hmm. that everyone's going to deal with their entire lives. You have the people like David Goggins who are still on that journey, who us as humans, we see him at the very top. Like he is like the pinnacle of mastering your own mindset and being able to be disciplined no matter what, but he's still working on his own journey. Lorenzo, you're on your journey. I'm on my journey. Everyone listening today is on their journey. So consistency just starts every single day when you wake up, and it doesn't stop when you go to bed. It just continually goes. So whatever method that you find that for yourself, you just got to own it up to yourself. And one thing that I would share also, this was told by a mentor of mine, but it absolutely changed my life. If you are working a regular job, you're working a typical 9-to-5 job, and your boss comes into your office or comes up to your cubicle or wherever you're sitting at your desk, and he says, all right, I have a task. Say it's a Monday morning. I have a task and it needs to get done by Friday by 5 p.m. What are you going to do that week as a worker when your boss tells you that? You're going to grind your butt off, even if it means some late nights, even if it means a couple extra hours or a skip lunch or whatever, you are going to get that assignment done. And so what my mentor was alluding to, he goes, okay, if your boss tells you that, you go ahead and do it because you have the respect for him and you don't want to lose your job. But he said, when you tell yourself you're going to commit to things, why aren't you putting in that same amount of effort? So if you tell yourself you're going to go to the gym this week, go to the gym. Do not sell yourself short. If you tell yourself you're going to do X, Y, or Z, don't sell yourself short. Act like you're the boss of your own life. And if you don't do it, you will be fired. Because at the end of the day, you can always live up to somebody else's standards, but you have to have that kind of self-commitment and own up to yourself what really matters.
Yeah, that's so good. It's like a perspective shift. So I see you started a couple of other businesses. You know, what is Get Over Yourself, and you know, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, Get Over Yourself was kind of a pet project of mine after I finished doing missionary work. I was kind of figuring out, I was asking God one day, I was praying. I said, okay, I just dedicated the past year, 2 years of my life to you, to trying to help people come closer to Christ and serve your children here on this earth. Then I ran out of money. I wasn't working that entire time when I was doing missionary work for a year in Brazil and then a year in Houston, Texas. And so I was like, okay, I got to get back to work. I'm going to go to college. I'm going to figure everything out. But at the same time, I still wanted a way to serve other people. And this theory of Get Over Yourself is what I kind of lived my entire life. And so it was my way of kind of reconciling with God. I'm going to focus on my business. I'm going to focus on my education right now. I got to make some money for my future family and whatnot. But at the same time, I still want to be of service to your children here on this earth. And so it was my way of being able to do that. So this theory of Get Over Yourself pretty simple. It started off as a joke when I was back in middle school. Back then, you know, what are the typical concerns that a middle school kid has? Does my crush have a crush on me? Do they like me back? Will I get a good grade on this test? Like, what am I having for dinner? Am I going to do good in my sports competition tonight? You know, like in the eyes of a middle school kid, life is so simple. And so I remember a lot of times my friends would be stressing about this kind of stuff. And I'm not saying I didn't, but it was kind of an ongoing joke where whenever they were stressing, I'd look at them and I'd say, yeah, you're fine. Get over yourself. So it's just like my way of like throwing them under the bus and saying like, your life's okay. Like, you don't have to stress about these little things. But then over time, it became a lot more powerful where I realized, like, kind of like what you already mentioned, Lorenzo, like this mindset shift that I could have inside of my life. When things happen to me, it's my choice to react a certain way. If somebody does something wrong to me, I could either let that eat me up the entire day or the entire week or month or year, or I could say, hey, it's okay. Get over myself. I'm going to be okay. So it's this simple little mindset shift that nothing's magical about it. It really is just my phrase or my way to say, like, no matter what happens in life, the goods, the bads, and the uglies, I need to learn to get over myself and be happy along the way.
And have you always been like that? Like, where did that come from?
I mean, like I said, it was kind of a joke that stemmed back from early middle school. I've always tried to live that way. I'm an optimist, if you couldn't tell by listening to this podcast today. So maybe that's kind of my inherent optimist inside of me. But also I just recognize, especially with young adults nowadays, there's always something holding them back. There's always some kind of limitation they have, whether that's self-imposed or they're kind of limiting their own beliefs because of something somebody else told them. But at the end of the day, that's all it is. It's just a limiting belief. It's something that you're using as an excuse to set you back. And I recognize everyone's got harder challenges and difficulties. Everyone's got their own trials and stuff. So Lorenzo, you're never going to fully understand exactly what I'm going through. I'll never fully understand what you're going through. But at the end of the day, everything is just an excuse. So you can choose to pull up your pants and get going, or you can sit there and cry and wait for your entire life to see you by. And as harsh as that sounds, I mean, that's the reality. Like, life isn't fair, yeah. But you can choose to make it as fair as you want just based upon how you react to it.
I love that. I love it 100%, because there's a difference between mentality. And I've used this in the past, but like having a victim mentality of like, oh, woe is me. Everything is happening to me. Nothing's going right. And it's like, okay, if nothing's going right, then why don't you try doing something else? Why don't you pivot? Why don't you ask questions? Doing the same thing over and over again, you're not getting a different result. That's the definition of insanity. It's like, yeah, you got to do something. You got to step out of your comfort zone. And that's what I love to tell people, you know. So that's why when I saw Get Over Yourself, I'm like, oh, that's completely in line with what I think. And I think it's great advice, you know, for anybody.
Yeah, thank you. No, I was just going to say, I mean, at the end of the day, like you said, if you're doing the same exact thing over and over, that literally is the definition of insanity. When you do the same thing and you expect different results. And if anyone feels like they're in that place, here's another business principle you could apply it to. But in a business, if things are not going your way, you're not making the kind of revenue that you need, you're not going in the direction you need, what do? You pivot. You choose a different segment of the market to figure out or point towards. You choose a different customer. You change your pricing model. Like, you pivot. You don't just sit there. It's like if you were on a boat and you see, it's like you're on the Titanic and you actually saw the iceberg, and instead of steering the ship the other way, you just go straight into it. That's where people are at in their lives, but they just don't recognize it. They don't take the time in the day to actually sit back and say, okay, I'm steering my ship towards the iceberg right now. Or maybe you already hit the iceberg and you're not like jumping off into the lifeboats. Like, you have to take the time to actually realize that. Don't just like constantly be go, 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 but like take the time to reflect on it.
That's so good. So what is interval? And, you know, can you shine a light on it? I know it's another business venture of yours, and I think that's the one that you are, your most recent one, right?
Yeah. So the podcast, it's kind of continual. That's what Get Over Yourself is. That's going to be around for the next 50 to 70 years until I die, you know. That's going to be kind of my lifelong venture. But Interval, if anybody's watching right now, you could see our logo and stuff behind me here. We're a virtual AI receptionist for small businesses, specifically targeted towards the automotive space. So a big issue we notice in the market these days is you as a consumer, Lorenzo, or whoever's listening to this podcast, you need to call into a repair shop. You got to get your car fixed, you know, rotate your tires, change your oil, whatever it is. But frankly, a lot of times when you call into these auto shops, you wait on hold for 15 minutes while a mechanic is fixing up another problem, or they just don't answer your phone call. And then you're choosing between six different businesses until one finally answers the call. And they say, okay, we got an appointment in 2 days, and you go drive it there and boom, that's how it's done. And we realized that these automotive businesses are losing on average of just under $40,000 a month just because they're missing customer phone calls. Because the data supports that when somebody calls into those businesses, if the automotive repair shop doesn't answer their call, 73% of customers go and just choose another business to the first one who answers the phone. And so we're like, okay, they're losing a ton of money, a ton of revenue on this business every single month just because they're not answering calls. So what our software does, our AI just simply steps in and answers those phone calls like a normal human receptionist would. And then it can respond to any kind of general inquiries that a customer would have. It schedules appointments for those oil changes, those test drives, whatever you might have. And then also we track valuable customer information and we send that all to the business themselves so they can know how they could drive better growth, create a better customer experience, and try and sell a little bit more to those existing customers.
I'm the type of customer that if I don't get an answer, definitely going to the next one until I can find someone. that's such a niche product that's cool that you come up with that. And how's that venture going so far?
It's fairly new. We're less than a year old right now. So everything is kind of kicking off the ground. Right now we only have 19 beta customers. So every week when there's some kind of issue or something, we go and fix it and then they keep using it. But so far it's just been absolutely incredible. The need in the market is huge. We have had more people than the 19 customers we're currently working with reach out, and then who are kind of down the pipeline and whatnot. But that's kind of the limit that we could take on at this time. So overall, the business is heading in a great trajectory. But like we already mentioned, if something crazy happens, and it always does, life always throws you curveballs, we'll be able to kind of move around and just adjust to that because that's what life has taught us.
And what failures have you encountered that you had to overcome, whether it's in, you know, this business or another business where you had to make that pivot, or maybe it's, you know, just in life where you figured something out.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I remember my freshman year of college, I thought I was going to be the next biggest genius because I was doing a clothing company with my cousin. That was like my big venture that year. And I started it and I was like, oh my gosh, this is the coolest thing ever. People are going to love our designs and everyone's going to be wearing, it was called Coda. Everyone was going to be wearing Coda clothing. And that thing was the biggest flop on earth. It taught me so many great lessons. My cousin and myself, and then one other partner, we learned a lot from it, which I absolutely love. But it was just funny to look how naive I was and think, I mean, clothing is the most like basic business ever. Anyone can make a design and throw it on a t-shirt and try and sell it. You got to have a lot more purpose behind it, I realized. But overall, like I mentioned at the very beginning of the episode, the principle of just getting started, I am forever grateful I did that. And there's been 20 other businesses that I've done the exact same thing with where I think it's the next big idea. I'll call my family. Hey, I got this idea. And at this point, they just all kind of roll their eyes and think, oh yeah, what's next? But it's the principle of just getting yourself out there, testing it a little bit, not being afraid to fail because you probably will fail, but just still putting yourself out there to learn, because those are the biggest learning experiences in my personal opinion, the ones where you get in, you try your hardest, but then you end up failing. So then the next time you go, okay, this is what I did last time. I'm not going to make those same mistakes.
And how does it feel being so young, you know, running your own business? Like, do people talk down to you at all? Do you have to like figure out, like you have to overcome, you know, certain scenarios where you're talking to someone where they might think, I don't know what they're thinking, but you know, sometimes you encounter that where like you're young and then I don't know, the gatekeepers are such that you feel like you have to overcome that type of, scenario.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's an excellent question. So anyone out there who's listening, who's trying to get started on their own business or do whatever while you're young, don't let that stop you. There will be plenty of bottlenecks. And I recognize that. I mean, we're young for a reason. There's a reason why adults who are in their 50s, 60s, 70s, they do have more knowledge, despite what you may think. They do have more knowledge. They have more life experience. You might not always agree with it. And it might not always be perfect for your trajectory, but they do have that knowledge because they've lived it. And so in some cases, yes, it is difficult, especially working with these mechanic shops. A lot of them are owned by people who are getting close to retirement age. I think in the U.S. here in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see a big gap where a lot of our fathers, that age group are starting to turn over their businesses and sell it to a younger crowd. And I'm noticing that a little bit with the businesses we've already been selling to. But it's kind of interesting. A lot of them will go, AI receptionist, no way on earth. My business will never need that. And like looking back, even though it's my personal brand and it's my business and my baby right now, I'm thinking, okay, whether it's me or one other company in the future, your business will incorporate that. That's just the reality of it. It's coming. It's like saying these days you won't have a website for your business. It's like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And so on that aspect, it's difficult, but at the same time, it also like, is the easiest way to get started too, because a lot of times I'll say, hey, like I'm just a college kid out here trying to make a name for himself. Can I set up a meeting with you? Boom. Meetings are easier to schedule. It's easier to get mentors. It's easier to get advice. And then I am connecting with a lot of these younger business owners as well who are under their 40s or who are just like, dude, what the heck? How do you even know what you're doing? And I'm like, I don't really. And they're like, I love the drive. Let's get started. So use it to your advantage. There's definitely going to be the people who are against it, but you can turn it into your advantage very easily.
I love the energy. Yeah. I love the, definitely could tell you're an optimist, and I see how that is helping you succeed.
Thanks, man.
So, you know, as we wrap up here, I like to end up with the two just final questions. Just, you know, again, if where can people reach you and connect with you in case, you know, they want to follow and hear more? And then what's your last piece of advice to our listeners here that you would want them to take away from this conversation?
Definitely. So like I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, if anyone needs to reach out to me, my emails are always open. It's llcgetoveryourself@gmail.com. Or you can find me on Instagram at getoveryourself_podcast. But the last little tidbit I'd share with, nothing revolutionary. Once again, it's just simple, practical advice from a young adult here. Don't be afraid to just do something. And I kind of mentioned that already. Just get started. Just put yourself out there. Find something that you enjoy and just get started. Whether that's a business, whether that's a new relationship, whether that's kind of a fitness goal, just go ahead and tell yourself you're going to do it and then own up to it. The biggest thing that I've been practicing in my life recently is making sure that when I commit to something, I'm committing 100% and not just telling myself I'm going to do X, Y, or Z and then never doing it, because subconsciously that's going to teach your brain that it's okay to give up on your goals. It's okay to not hold yourself accountable, and it's okay to just kind of let it fade into the background when that's not how it should be. So even if you're committing to something very small, just go ahead and do it. Something very, very mediocre in your day-to-day routine, but you can get it done. That's reading one page of a book every single day. Perfect. Go ahead and do it. That's taking a walk around your cul-de-sac. Go and do it. But make sure you're doing it every single day, because you owe yourself that. You owe yourself that self-gratification and kind of that self-worth. That it's inside of you. You just got to actually go out and do it and not cheat yourself.
That's such good sound advice, Brandon. Thank you so much, you know, for all your wisdom, and appreciate you for being on the
podcast. Awesome. Thanks,
today.
Lorenzo, man. I appreciate you having me.